Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Fate is a lie. There is only choice. At least in the case of acceptable people choosing to be unacceptable. Dramatically explored on What Flash F on Netflix. Oscar winner Renee Zellweger stars, and executive producer showrunner Mike Kelly joins me next in an internet radio exclusive from Los Angeles. How is Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and fellow competition holding up in the expanding universe of smart interactive television sets and TV-connected products? And what does the coming competition from Disney, Apple, and others have in store? We'll connect with Cheddar senior reporter Michelle Castillo later this hour here in New York. Also ahead, Clinton TV, No More Star, The Right Stuff, No More Silicon Valley after this year, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, it's the final day of May 2019, and tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get three free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 77 degrees at the top of the hour. It is sunny here in the New York metro area, and we welcome you on this final day of May. That's 2019 to be exact, to the program All About Television. Good to have you with us from wherever you're tuning us in. That's a wonderful guest for you over the course of the next hour, and we invite you to interact with us. All it takes, pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Unfortunately, at this moment, our chat room is down. The BTR people are trying to get it fixed. We'll let you know if they do. And if they do, you can check it out at SimonApple04 at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Right now, our chat room is down. So right now, interact with us only by the phone. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect to us by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow the instructions and other people can be live with you. Mike Kelly from What Flash It on Netflix joins us live from L.A. after these news notes. Last year was the Obama's turn, that's Barack and Michelle, to create a TV venture. Now check out similar intentions from the Clintons, Hillary, and daughter Chelsea. According to Bloomberg and other news organizations, the Clintons want to form a production company for TV and film work, dealing with women. Like the Obama's higher ground entity, a studio or programmer would get first crack at what the Clintons generate, plus co-finance TV content. Higher ground has Netflix in its corner, in case you don't know. Hillary Clinton, by the way, is already on board The Women's Hour, a TV series project about women gaining the right to vote, co-produced by Steven Spielberg's Amblin TV. We don't know yet where that venture will run. The Right Stuff is going right to a TV series playing next year worldwide at National Geographic. Leonardo DiCaprio's Appian Way Enterprise will collaborate with Warner Media's Warner Horizon television unit on this adaptation of the famous Tom Wolfe classic book about the U.S. space program. Planned as a multi-year saga, season one will have Suits co-star Patrick A. Adams playing John Glenn, one of the first astronauts to orbit the Earth in the 1960s. Filming will take place in Cocoa Beach, Florida this fall. The effort to take Star from Fox to another TV service has concluded. No go on season 4 for Lee Daniels' saga of an all-women musical trio after a group of conversations with BET, owned Oprah Winfrey Network, and others. In a social media post, Daniels declared that the spirit of Star will live on in all his projects going forward. Now time for some quickies. The opening NBA Finals game was down 18%. That's 18% viewership from Game 1 last May, according to preliminary Nielsen data. Game 2 appears Sunday on ABC and ESPN Deportes. Descendants 3, sequel number 2 of the popular Disney Channel movie franchise, will arrive on that service August 2nd. Premier League Lacrosse, the new 16 Pro Sports Enterprise, will debut tomorrow on smart TV sets and smart TV devices via NBC Sports Gold, then Sunday on NBC Sports Network. And we learned in the last hour that another long-running HBO series, Silicon Valley, will be gone for good by year's end. Season 6 of this popular tech-centric company, put together by Mike Judge and Alec Berg, will play this fall. 7 or 8 episodes will be it. Of course, the other shows that HBO is saying goodbye to already this year, Veep, and a little thing called Game of Thrones. And that is news notes for today. Now, turning us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer and showrunner of What Flash It, which started a week ago on Netflix, we welcome to the program for the very first time, Mike Kelly. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Simon.
Thank you for joining us. Mike, how are things going 1 week into What If? What's the reaction from the public?
It's been a ball. I mean, it's such a fun show. It's wild and woolly and weird, and people out there seem to really get it and are having a good time. You know, we're out there to entertain the people, so it seems like we're achieving that, and that feels really good. So I'm really grateful to all the fans out there.
It sounds like people are getting, Mike, that this is a program, while it deals with a unique side of morality, that it's not taking itself too seriously, and neither is the star, Renee Zellweger.
Correct. This show is, again, meant to, it's provocative, and it's meant to be fun. You know, television can be fun. I just want to remind everyone of that. So with Revenge, we tried to go for a little bit of a heightened reality and a kind of an out there soap opera that was, you know, tantalizing and you know, again, provocative, but also kind of gets to the heart also. So we tried to do a similar thing here with What If. I think what's cool about both of those shows is that every culture around the world can understand revenge and that feeling that you get when you've been wronged. And I think everybody in the same vein can understand the what ifs in life and, you know, the choices that we make while we're, whether it's financial or personal or political, you know, we all have a moral line that we've drawn for ourselves. And it seems like this moment in time, everybody's sort of watching that line sort of fade away and disappear. So I wanted to do a show that actually had something to say underneath all of that high gloss and fun.
How did you and your colleagues come up with the idea of Turning Point Television, where each season deals with one particular turning point that someone chooses to follow?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I missed the first part of your question there, if you don't mind repeating that.
That's okay, Mike. How did you and your colleagues decide to do a show that deals with turning points, where people decide this is the way I'm going to go with my life and all the consequences that come with it?
Well, again, because it's such a relatable thing, we, as you said earlier when you were starting the program, I like stories that are about acceptable people that make some unacceptable choices. This show, as far as each individual season goes, you know, as long as we stay true to the what if themes, and I'm not doing a sliding doors type thing like where I show what could have happened and what did happen. I'm sticking with a choice that's made, and you just see the fallout from that on a rocket ride for 10 episodes. So each season, for me, you know, the Revenge was, I borrowed the structure of The Count of Monte Cristo for Revenge. And for the season one of What If, I took the question at the center of Indecent Proposal and just started from there. And so next season, if we're lucky enough to get one, I'm going to tap into another piece of iconic fiction that everybody knows and try to turn it on its head again. But I don't know if I'm allowed to tell everyone what that is just yet.
How long was this project, Mike, in development for? And along the way, when did Renee Zellweger come in? This is a big thing for her. It's her first major television role.
Yeah, I mean, Renee's so brave. She's so smart. She's so kind. I just could go on and on about her. The show works because she took this risk. The show was in development. For a year. Originally, what's cool about this? Originally, I wrote this as a sort of a big swing broadcast play, and over at NBC. It didn't move forward, and the current president of NBC was kind enough and cool enough to, she really loved the show, to make Netflix aware of it, in particular three executives, Stacey Silverman, Bella Bajaria, and Cole Galvin. And they really got it, and I went in. I already had a script. I went in. I pitched them the show that I wanted to do, told them that I wanted to tap into that sort of heightened tone of the 80s, 90s social thrillers, the Fatal Attractions and the Basic Instincts, and just have you know, take people, like I said, on a rocket ride, and they got it immediately and greenlit the series. So that's how it came together. Rarely do things come together in the way you expect.
Well, Mike, we got a call, so I'm going to green light that right now. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Hello. All right, hang on for a second. We'll see. We'll try one more time, see if that person comes on. And
no
if
problem.
Not, we'll go forward from there. Let's see. Here we go. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Okay,
just me.
Apparently, issue with line, but we'll go from there. We have Mike
That's
Kelly.
Okay.
He is the executive producer and showrunner of What Flash If. It's the new Netflix drama starring Oscar winner Renee Zellweger, and you can find it on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. Mike is with us live this half hour from Los Angeles, and we invite you to interact with us. So give us that call, 646-652-2906. Our chat room is still out of order. The VTR people are working on it, and as soon as we find out if it's available, we will let you know. Coming up Monday on Smart Be Televised, our lead guest will be both the host and the executive producer of the brand-new Dick Wolf series premiering next month on Fox, First Responders Live. The host is Josh Elliott, the executive producer is Rasha Devkovich, and they'll both be with us live as our lead guest. That's First Responders Live with us exclusively, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. We have a 90-minute episode coming your way one week from today. Tell you about that a little later on. Mike, we are seeing over the last decade a big revival in anthology shows, both weekly anthologies where the story, the characters, and so forth change every week, the classic anthology style, but also the yearly anthology, which was developed by people like Ryan Murphy with American Horror Story,
mm-hmm.
American Crime Story, where it is the plot changes every season. Did you consider making What If a weekly anthology as opposed to a season-long one? And what made you decide ultimately to go for being a season?
I intended this to be an annual anthology and really looked at each season as a 10-hour movie. The way that I approached it with the writers, we divided the 10 hours of this show into thirds, the way a movie plays, so that the first handful of episodes stands as the first act of the movie, and then the middle handful is the centerpiece, and then we have a crazy finale, which is composed of the last four episodes, really. So that was really exciting for me. I think one of the frustrations that I had when I was doing Revenge is, you know, I originally told them that this was a closed-ended story, and I wanted it to be five seasons of 12 episodes each, but that just wasn't the world we were living in at the time for ABC. It was a big hit around the world, and they wanted more episodes, and I could understand that, but it wasn't the story that I wanted to tell. I wanted to close it up. So after the second season, we had 44 episodes in the can, and I still wanted to close it up around 60 episodes, but you know, ABC wanted to do to see how long they could keep it going, and that's their prerogative. But that's why I left at the end of that at the end of the second season. So on this show, I knew that the kind of stories that I'm interested in telling, that they're best served in a closed-ended format. So, I always was really excited to get in there and do what I think works best for the kinds of stories I want to tell. And I think that's the answer to the question.
Well, when you choose to film a season of a television series that way, to look at it as a long movie as opposed to episode, has this and that, how does that impact the way Renee approached the series, how your fellow writers and directors approach the series, how everybody really involved approaches doing the work?
That is a great question. Again, I just have to speak to Renee's bravery and the way that she collaborates, her generosity. All she knew of this show was a conversation that she and I had in my office and the first episode that I had written, the I guess you could call it a pilot, but the first of the 10 episodes. And I talked her through where we were going with her character, and I had it all plotted out. The way that I like to think about storytelling, certainly on this show is the way that you look at the, you know, a map of like a map of the United States. If you're going to drive from San Francisco to New York, and that's going to be your journey, I like to put pins around the map. So basically, we can stop in Kansas City and Chicago and Cincinnati or wherever, but it's up to us how we get there. So I basically told her the signposts that we were going to hit on the journey, and I told her exactly where we were headed, and that wasn't going to change. So she just really trusted that we could pull it off, and you know, she was the one who designed really the look of the character, the cadence of her voice. She provided all that wit and you know, that sort of roiling secret life. And she just really committed to being Anne Montgomery, and it was a full collaboration. So I know it was scary, but she just killed it.
How did you and everybody come up with the storyline?
Well, I can tell you where Renee's character came from, that character has sort of been bouncing around my head vaguely forever. I think that one of the first movies that really hooked into me was The Graduate, and I know I'm not alone in that. And Anne Bancroft's portrayal of Mrs. Robinson just it was just unforgettable for me. And I always wondered what the character of Mrs. Robinson would have been like had she not drowned herself in alcohol and self-loathing and the neighbor's son. And instead, put all of that power and energy and ferocity into personal enterprise and professional enterprise. And so that's kind of where the character came from. And as far as the broader story, like I said earlier, I'm just such a huge fan of those early or late 80s, early 90s social thrillers like Indecent Proposal and Hand That Rocks the Cradle and again Basic Instinct and Fatal Attraction. So I wanted to do something with that kind of a tone that you just don't really see anymore. And so those things blended together, and I was actually approached by an agent in town who represented Alex Gartner, who's one of the producers from Indecent Proposal all those years ago. And he made an introduction and said, "Hey, what do you think about turning this into a TV show?" That's sort of where it all began.
All right, I think we have another call. Let's see if we can get this one on the air. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Tow Live. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Robert from Los Angeles.
Robert, good to have you on. You're on with Mike Kelly from What Flash If. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike. I have a quick question for you, which is the reception for What If seems to be pretty universally people agreeing that it's a amazing, bingeable, just you want to watch it all in 1 second, and a word's been thrown around of guilty pleasure. And I'm wondering, what do you think of that term? Is that something that you're not a fan of, or do you take that as a compliment? How do you feel about the perception of the show in that way?
That's a really good question. I think that I was kind of tormented by that term back on Revenge, which was also called a guilty pleasure, because it feels like it's just such a hard thing to pull off, and going in there with that intention and to entertain at that level, to sort of vibrate at that frequency, it's really tricky. So I don't love it when somebody sort of besmirches an art form, because it really is one. But I've come to embrace it, because really at the end of it, people, when I was pitching this, I was telling Netflix I wanted people yelling at their televisions and you know, drinking a six pack of wine while they were watching it and calling all their friends. And so to do that and to sort of hit that tone, if people want to call it a guilty pleasure, that's fine, as long as they're enjoying themselves and having fun and watching it. So I think I've come to be okay with it.
Very cool.
Robert from Los Angeles, thanks very much for calling. Really appreciate it. We're going to try to get one more call in, and here it is. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, hello. Okay. Again, thank you, Robert from Los Angeles, for making the call happen. Before we take a quick break, Mike, one of the things we hear about when we talk to Netflix show creators and producers is what kind of reaction are they getting from outside the United States or outside the country where they produce the show? And we often find that they are really startled by, oh, I hear this reaction from Latin America or Asia or Korea or whatever. Are you getting a lot of feedback or reaction from people outside the U.S.?
Well, I can tell you that we're getting that reaction on Twitter and across social media. Netflix will not share any data with me and for a few more weeks. They keep it very close to the vest, but I know that they are feeling good, I think was the quote, about where we were a few days into launch and told me to just hang tight. But judging by how social media has been responding, it feels like this is hitting all around the world. And again, that was sort of by design. The idea of a universally understood concept, the what ifs in life, the roads that you take or don't take. Everybody from every culture can understand that. So we're hopeful that everybody will continue to sort of spread the word amongst their friends, and that it'll be one of those summer shows that everybody loves and remembers.
What/If is now in its second week on Netflix, and you can get Netflix. You have a smart TV set or a smart TV device like Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Google Chromecast, Roku, et cetera, et cetera. We got Mike Kelly. He's the executive producer, showrunner, main writer of What/If, starring the Oscar winner Renee Zellweger. And he's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. If you have a question or comment for him, get it in, 646-652-296. Again, we apologize for our chat room being out of business, at least for now. If we do get it up before the end of the show, we will let you know. And when we come today, we have a big 90-minute episode for you. Ripley's Believe It or Not is coming back on television, and Believe It or Not, it's coming back next month on The Travel Channel with Bruce Campbell as the host. We will have Daniel Schwartz, one of the key executive producers of the series. He's also vice president of Travel Channel. He will probably be our lead guest. Then we'll preview a new wrinkle of the annual North Fork Television Festival in Long Island. And we will find out about a brand new project involving an effort to do a science-oriented TV scripted pilot with some money involved and a major foundation, the Albert P. Sloan Foundation. We'll have the director of programming for the festival, Elias Pagaris, will be with us. And also, GSN has got a brand new game show coming up next month with Sherry Shepherd as the host. It's called The Best Ever Trivia Show. What if James, that guy from a little thing called Jeopardy, is going to show up after he wins all that money? But we will have on next Friday, we'll have Brendan Huntington, the executive producer, will be with us. It's all coming your way Friday, a week from today, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Mike, what did you learn out of doing Revenge, which was a weekly adventure, and this woman who was like trying to get revenge on everybody, and then bring it to more of an anthology where you have 10, 13 episodes to flesh out a whole plot of story?
What I learned was when you have a story that wants to be close-ended, you've got to honor that. Here's actually a different side of that question. I think one of the cool things about broadcast television at the time is that it's so fast paced, and it forces you to really there are act outs for commercial breaks, and you have to write something that's going to hook the audience back after that 4-minute break or whatever it is. And then you have to do something that's going to hook the audience back for another episode. And so, really working out those kind of writerly muscles that can do that helped me make the switch over to bingeable television, to 10 hours of TV that you have to see the next episode. And so that's one of the things that I learned from writing Revenge and broadcast that I think really helped make What If a something that people can't seem to put down.
But before I let you go, we're in this era where we're now seeing everybody from major TV show makers to people who are just starting out in the medium signing long-term development deals with a Netflix, a Hulu, an Amazon, a Warner Brothers, a Lionsgate, other individual production companies. What do you think about this movement? Do you want to be part of that movement, get your own contract where you do all your stuff for one player, or do you want to sort of, you know, scope the market, you know, no matter what happens with what shift, scope the market out and be willing to play for anybody?
You know, I just want to tell great stories and work with awesome people. So so what I can tell you about Netflix is that, you know, the rumors are all true. They're the most supportive and clever and collaborative and kind group of, you know, creative executives in town. So I'd be lucky to work with them on a regular basis. But again, I just want to tell great stories. So wherever, whoever's going to allow me to do that, I'm all in.
What Flash If, a very, very unique anthology story with the Oscar from Cold Mountain and Cameron and all sorts of other things, Renee Zellweger. She has a very interesting performance, but if you've not seen the show, check it out. It has a very interesting performance by her and a great cast along with her as well. And it's now its second week on Netflix. Remember, Netflix is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about the show online, you can go to www.netflix.com. www.netflix.com. /F, now in its second week on Netflix. Mike Kelly, the executive producer, showrunner, and writer, thank you again for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Congratulations on the early reaction to What's Flash If, and hopefully this is the beginning of a great and wonderful run for you, Renee, and everybody else involved.
Yeah, I couldn't be happier. Thank you so much, Simon.
You're welcome, Mike. Take care. Have a super weekend.
Okay, you too.
Mike Kelly from What's Flash If, and yes, earlier from Revenge, joining us live from Los Angeles. Stand by, our classroom question of the week coming your way, but first some fine words from the folks at Audible.com. A number of interesting shows are premiering today, including another Netflix attraction, the long-awaited drama about the Central Park Five case Wednesday. See, a lot of people think that's going to be up for some Emmy Awards for Best Miniseries. A lot of great reaction to that series already. And also, Good Omens. That's the Neil Gaiman adaptation from Amazon. And guess what? If you've never checked out the book, you can now check it out in audio format through audible.com. That's right. And Good Omens can be one of the three audiobooks that you can get through a trial subscription. All it takes is to go to www.audibletrial.com/televised. You know, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, inspiration. There's over 150,000 titles to choose from. I should say 180,000 titles to choose from. Almost 200,000 by now, by the way. And you listen on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. And get this. There's now a growing number of original programming through Audible Originals. It's everything from one-woman, one-man shows, Broadway, regional theater, off-Broadway titles, and original productions made especially for Audible.com. And in your trial run, you can get not one, but two of those Audible Original books when you order. So, for three free audiobooks and that one-month trial and great customer service from Audible's parent, of course, Amazon.com, what you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And remember, audible.com is a proud partner of the annual New York Television Festival. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We've been offering it for the last week and a half. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can get two books, Gentleman Jack, The Real Ad Lister, based on the popular HBO original series that is going into a second season next year by Ann Schulma, and the adventure novel Delta-5 by Daniel Suarez. Maybe you'll call him the new Michael Crichton. Here's the question. Name the town where the Walking Dead governor lives. Name the town where the Walking Dead governor lives. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget when you email, you enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you answer the correct answer, you will win those two audiobooks, those two great books. And if you missed a question a moment ago, we'll try to bring it back before the end of the show. If not, check it out tomorrow morning on Facebook and at Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so. And all the very best. Remember, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com to be part of our classic trivia question to win. Get in the game today. And all the very best to you. This is Tomorrow We Televised. We are the program all about the two. We're coming your way Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. We're also brought to you on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Delighted that you're with us on this final day of May 2019. If you have questions and comments for our next guest, make sure you give us a call, 646-652-2906. And coming up in our next half hour, we will have that second guest. It's Michelle Castillo, the new senior reporter at Cheddar, formerly of CNBC. We'll talk about where TV is at and where it's going, from Netflix to Apple, to a little company called Walmart, and what they're up to doing in television starting next month. We'll have Michelle joining us live from New York, from Cheddar's headquarters, but first we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradioonspeaker.com, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for Gumbo Talk. Check it out next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Gumbo Talk exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And remember, best BTR speaker available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televise, our final episode of May on the final day of May 2019. We're live from New York, Simon Eckbaum with you live from the Big Apple, 77 degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. At 646-652-2906. Number works anywhere you're catching us on BTR and Spreaker. Our chat room is still out of business. We're sorry about that. Hopefully by Monday we will get it back in order. My next guest is a senior reporter for Cheddar, the fast-growing business news service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and now available in some markets on broadcast multicast channels and on cable systems like Altice here in the New York metro area. She used to be a reporter at CNBC. It's a pleasure to welcome to, for the first time, Michelle Castillo. Michelle, welcome in.
Hey, great to be on. It's nice to actually be able to talk rather than a few minutes at conferences.
Well, it's great to have you with us from where Cheddar is on a day where the stock market, unfortunately, is tanking because of all sorts of things happening in the news. But let's first talk about Netflix. You follow it. I do, too. What's your thoughts about where Netflix is at? Going in a time where they already have competition from the likes of Amazon and Hulu and Crackle and CBS All Access, and they're now a few months away from facing new competition from the likes of Apple, Disney Plus, and so on.
So I think Netflix is in an interesting position. It was the market leader when it came to streaming services, and everyone considers Netflix to be the groundbreaking technology that made people turn off their traditional cable TVs and watch content online. But now they're not the only player in the market. For the price that they're charging, there's a lot of new entrants that are coming in. Let's just talk about Disney Plus, for instance. You get the entire library of Disney content, plus a few originals, franchises that family love, like Star Wars and Marvel, and it's only going to be $7 at launch. I think that we're going to start seeing consumers decide and make stronger budgetary decisions whether or not it's worth it to keep that Netflix subscription or try something new.
Mm-hmm. It seems one way that, or two ways really, Netflix is trying to stay ahead of everybody. Number one, making these long-term deals with everybody from Ryan Murphy to the Obamas to Regina King, the award-winning actress, and so on. But the other way that they're now getting in is interactive programming. Bandersnatch has turned out to be a big winner for them. They now have an interactive unscripted show called You vs. Wild Bear Grylls. When Netflix had their latest quarterly video conference call, Ted Sarandos said that 26 million people had interacted with the service of that program in a matter of a few weeks. They've got an interactive animated show coming up possibly this fall, as well as the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt now final episode that will be in that form. What do you think about Netflix's move in interactive television? And do you think, by the way, do you think that with them and YouTube getting in and some other people getting in that maybe we are at long last, the interactive TV era? Happening.
So, you know, I'm sounding like I'm really anti-Netflix right now. While I did enjoy Bandersnatch, and I see the idea of interactive television being a way to draw consumers in, I still feel like it's pretty gimmicky to me. It does add value in some content, and it does make sure that you're paying attention to the show. But I think for a lot of people, it's not something that would make someone want to subscribe to a service. It's something that's an added bonus value if you're already a subscriber, personally, in my opinion. That being said, I think that there maybe in the future, if there's more ways to create other kinds of interactive content, maybe this could be a draw in the future. But in its current form, I feel like it's still not a mainstream thing.
Recently, you were at the Pay TV show, which is an annual event that started last year in Denver, and I saw your interview with Amazon, with an executive from there. What does Amazon think about what they're doing with Amazon Fire TV, their smart TV device, what they're doing with Amazon in terms of being a TV programmer?
So Amazon is in an interesting position. I know that a lot of people, they kind of group Netflix and Amazon in as competitors. But I think when it comes at the end of the day, people consider Netflix to be an entertainment company, and Amazon Prime Video is really just a bonus added to the Amazon Prime subscription. Now, I think if Amazon wants to grow as a media business, they're going to have to develop stuff like the Fire TV and make that the market leader. They're saying right now they have more monthly active users than Roku. But how Amazon's planning on doing that is through creating better user interfaces and adding things like Alexa for voice control, just making their system more seamless and easier to use for the modern consumer. On top of that, I found it interesting. Amazon is a competitor. Amazon Video is a competitor to a lot of other media companies. But it's kind of getting hard for media companies not to kind of ignore or keep Amazon off their platforms. Liberty Global's Virgin, for example, they just integrated Amazon Prime Video into their service. And also we're seeing that even Chromecast now allows you to watch Amazon Prime Video there, and likewise YouTube is coming back to the Fire TV. So we're seeing a lot more synergies in this space that will make Amazon's Fire TV and services a little bit more appealing, and just the idea of becoming better and easier to use for the consumer.
Mm-hmm. One other thing about Amazon, Michelle, is it seems they have an ace in the hole that they're not exploiting, which is that if you have Amazon Fire TV in any capacity, as an operating system in your television set, as a streaming stick, as a plug-in, as a set-top box, you have the capability to order any Amazon piece of merchandise you want. I'm not sure if Whole Foods is part of it yet, but at least any Amazon merchandise you want. It seems that they're not exploiting that. They could very easily, you know, become an interactive TV commerce player thing like that. If they were to showcase in advertising, if they were to spread the word out publicly, if they were to let folks know that they would Best Buy or at the Amazon store, if they've got already around the country, that they have this capability. It seems that people, if they are doing this, they're doing it by accident. Are you sensing that too?
Yeah, I've always thought it was interesting. So I think we're starting to see the age of shoppable TV ads, the idea that you could watch something and let's say watch an episode of Friends, and if you like their outfit, you can either pull up your phone or you can click on something and buy it. And to be honest, I thought Amazon would be the first to offer this capability. So they have a wealth of shopper data. They're already an online platform. But for some reason, they've been hesitant about combining the data part of their business, the shopping data part from Amazon sales, with their media content. On background, I've heard that some executives have mentioned it, but there is no plans immediately to do anything like this in the future. But, you know, their competitors are already doing this. Walmart, at their Vudu upfront presentation, has already unveiled shoppable ads using the wealth of Walmart data, and now you can watch episodes on Vudu and buy things from there. And similar, NBC Universal also unveiled shoppable ads during their upfront this weekend during the French Open. I think you'll see their first shoppable ad during the French Open, where you can scan Djokovic's outfit and be able to actually buy it online using a QR code on your mobile phone.
Mm-hmm. Hold that thought about Vudu, because I want to get to that next.
Okay.
This is a story that I think has been very underreported, and it could break as early as next month, the situation with Walmart and how big a TV player they want to be. We've got Michelle Castillo with us, former correspondent at CNBC. She's now senior reporter for Cheddar, the very popular business news service that's now available, depending on where you are, on smart TV sets and smart devices, or on multicast channels, or on a cable system near you, including here in the metropolitan area, the Altice cable system. She joins us live from Cheddar's headquarters here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Televised. Sign up. I'm also with you for the Big Apple, 77 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Michelle, bring it in, 646-652-2906. And coming up 2 weeks from today on Tomorrow We Tell Live, ABC has got a new game show they're launching next month called Holy Moly. Think miniature golf like you've never seen miniature golf before. Well, I'll give you a hint. It's not miniature, and it's certainly not your father or grandfather's miniature golf course, I'll say that. We will have Wes Deming, the executive producer of the series, with us live. That's 2 weeks from today, holy moly, from ABC, live here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Michelle, you and I were at the Voodoo New Front event here in New York, where Walmart basically, I thought, threw down the gauntlet and said, we are going to be a huge television player. This is not going to be a side business for us. We are going to take this video-on-demand service and do original programming. And we have this $250 million investment in a little thing called Echo, which Samsung and MGM and venture capitalists are involved with, and we're going to break that loose on our service this fall. First of all, what did you come away with from that event? And secondly, have you done any reporting about it since in terms of what Walmart is up to?
So, yeah, I've been fascinated by Walmart's move into advertising for quite some time. So Walmart's really positioning themselves as the everyman's media service in multiple ways. First of all, they mentioned during this presentation that more than 250 million Americans shopped at Walmart last year. That's about 95% of the country. So think about how much data they just have on user habits and shopping behaviors. On top of that, they made it very clear that the market that they're going for isn't really the coastal elites who are watching the award-winning shows in New York or the really obscure shows in Silver Lake and Los Angeles. What they really want to reach is the average American who wants to watch TV and wants to watch good programming. But, you know, they want something accessible. And the thing about Walmart and Voodoo, unlike Netflix and Amazon, is about 10,000 titles are free. It's ad-supported. And I actually think that's a lot of where the industry is going to go. With all this talk of everyone releasing these services, you have Warner Media coming out as well, and Disney Plus and Netflix. It's all going to add up for Americans' budgets. And so I think what Walmart can offer and a lot of the people who are ad-supported can offer is a free alternative. So maybe I would not have paid for a subscription service from Voodoo, but hey, it's free. I might check it out. All I have to do is watch a few ads. I think that's fine. I think the majority of people are okay with that. Just Hulu announced earlier this week that 70% of their customers are willing to do the ad-supported program to pay the $6 a month. So, you know what, I think that Walmart has a very interesting way to reach that mass consumer. And just remember, Netflix doesn't really offer advertising right now. So if you want to reach people who are real cord cutters or just not watching on traditional cable TV systems, Walmart could be it.
Yeah, three things really came up to mind while first watching that presentation and then afterward. What came out watching is, number one, they could break this interactive advertising market wide open, because of the ability to run an ad and pop a thing on the screen saying, if you'd like to add this to your shopping cart, Walmart shopper, do it with your voice through artificial intelligence on your TV set or through remote control, boom, you get the product added to your cart the next time that you pick up the merchandise from Walmart. And secondly, they not only have the audience, the dedicated audience of shoppers out there, but they've got the billions of dollars to spend on content. So they could very easily make deals with major players or new talent to do it. But the other thing that really surprised me was the lack of coverage by the media at large about this. I would think, hey, the world's largest retailer, once again, TV in a big way, you would have every major news organization, you would have every major business news channel, you would have every major entertainment trade press covered, and very few did, at least in the early – were you surprised at the lack of coverage about it?
I actually was. I thought, I covered it on Cheddar, and I've been fascinated by Walmart's move into advertising. I think that a lot of people, though, are so – here's the thing. Like, I think a lot of reporters and a lot of media outlets are still obsessed with this idea that a media company has to come from a traditional media world, and they're finally embracing, and a lot of people are starting to embrace the fact that, okay, maybe people like – telecom companies that are buying traditional media companies, maybe they can be media companies in the future. I don't think they're really looking at these retailers, which have, again, a wealth of data they can leverage for advertising as media giants. And I think that is going to be a blind spot going forward. You have someone like Walmart, again, as you mentioned, they have the capital to buy content. They have the data to sell advertising. They've been hiring like crazy for their Walmart media group. but I just think people just think of them still as a retailer, so they're not really looking at their media business. I also think that's people started looking at Amazon a little too late when it came to advertising as well. But again, because of this, people thought of them more as an e-commerce play and a cloud play, but they weren't really, they didn't really think that these companies could move into media. I don't know. It's interesting. I think that people aren't paying attention to Target. I think there's a lot of people moving, a lot of these brands that are traditionally in a different space outside of media that are moving into the entertainment space that are just not getting that coverage. And I think we're all going to be surprised who wins out at the end.
Pretty much 2 cents in, Michelle. I think so, too. I think this Walmart is a big story. It could be one of the big stories of the year. I've heard that Walmart is going to make a big deal about this at the next shareholders meeting next month in Bentonville, Arkansas, their headquarters. They may do a press conference here in New York at some point to talk more about Voodoo and the Echo situation, so we have to watch that. And before we move off the retailer situation, are you hearing anything new about Costco? There were reports earlier this year that Mark Greenberg, the former head of Epix, I think was trying to get Walmart to do a streaming service a la Netflix, is trying to encourage Costco, another major retailer, to do a streaming original programming service.
I had heard that as well, and to be honest, I dug around a little bit on that. I don't know. I don't think Costco needs to go into content right now. While they do also have information, they have a pretty solid business reaching out to their consumers the way they do. They have the subscription. They have a subscription fee for their users. They still have great profit margins. I don't know. I don't think maybe they looked at it, but I don't think it's a serious move for Costco.
And Target, whose new front I saw the day after Walmart's event, they made it very clear they're not after the original promo, but you get a sense that maybe not too far down the road they might do an interactive shopping service over the television set. They again have the infrastructure to do it. They've got the customers to do it. We'll see what happens. Let's move to Hulu. And now that it's under complete Disney rule, what's your sense about where it's going?
For Hulu, Hulu's really interesting. I mean, I find them all interesting, but Hulu already has a huge market share, and they've benefited from the fact that they're partially owned by so many networks, so they get all that premium quality content for a pretty good deal rather than Netflix that has to sign these multi-million-dollar deals. I mean, and really pay out of pocket or develop their own content. Hulu's had a couple hits in the past few years, Handmaid's Tale, and they're really developing great original programming. And Disney already has said that they're thinking of Hulu as their more adult-focused streaming play, and they can bundle it with Disney Plus and ESPN Plus and create really a great entertainment offering to the average American consumer. I know that Comcast said they have no intent to pull their content off Hulu, but I still question if that's going to happen down the road when Comcast is launching NBC Universal streaming service in a few years, and that's going to be free ad supported, whether or not they even need to be on a Hulu. If the idea that having one large owner from a media company will kind of cannibalize Hulu and make all the other networks that are on there, like Fox and NBC, not really want to be on Hulu. The one thing that I do think Hulu does have going for it is ad-supported. And for advertisers trying to reach a streaming audience, there's very few places for them really to find that premium content base with such a large user base. They can't go to Netflix. They can't really go to Amazon. I mean, I guess you could Thursday Night Football and a couple of the live programming, but traditionally their Amazon Prime originals don't really have advertising. So Hulu still is the premium place where you can buy television ads and commercials for premium content, which gives it the market share leader. Now, will we see more ad-supported content services coming out? There are a few that are Viacom just bought Pluto TV, and it's different from Hulu, but again, it's an ad-supported free service. You have Walmart, as I mentioned, that's going to be ad-supported. So Hulu isn't the only player in the sphere right now, but I do think that Hulu is still the market leader when it comes to ad-supported streaming television. And you'll still see a lot of brands bringing dollars to them.
There were two events this past Wednesday here in New York. I went to both of them. The Video Ad Summit that Peter Naylor, the ad guru at Hulu, was at, and also the OTT Executive Conference. And there seemed to be a unified opinion that from here on, if you're going to make it as a service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, that's going to be your way to get through to viewers. You're going to have to be ad-supported. It looks like subscription video pretty much has reached its peak, and that from here on it's ad-supported. And I think we saw a little bit of that with WarnerMedia. You got a sense that WarnerMedia is going to go more ad-supported than we think. And also, Comcast has already mentioned, so we're going to be ad-supported. You wonder whether Disney Plus might, in that regard, look at doing some sort of advertiser tie-in, even though they pretty much made it clear when they go on in November that they will be free of ads.
Yeah, I think that Disney is in an interesting position because they just have such notable franchises going into the game. Like, if you're a parent, Disney Plus is a no-brainer. It's entertainment that your kids can enjoy, so that really could cut money from your cable bill if you don't want traditional TV, and adults can join as well. So Disney comes with that nostalgia factor and the idea that people know the content on that platform already. And people trust the Disney brand. But going back to my point when I was talking earlier, this idea that there's so many services right now these days, that they're all adding up. I'm paying $9 here and $10 here, and even a $5.99 service like Hulu, I think people are really going to start considering what they're spending on, and we're going to reach this tipping point. And that's why I think we're seeing the rise of the free ad-supported services, because I think companies are realizing, look, people are not going to be willing to shell out more than their traditional cable bill just to have a million different services. I barely have time to watch all the ones that I subscribe to. So I don't know. I think that we're just going to start seeing I think the move to ad-supported content is a reaction to that, on top of the fact that brands really want to get in on this digital streaming content, and there's really no there's no platforms that really accept advertising until now. So now that we're starting to see, hey, we can get money from these commercial advertisers, plus we can offer something for free for a consumer base that doesn't want to spend more money anymore, I think that's what we're starting to see.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, we got to talk Apple. With Apple TV Plus. On Monday, Apple has its Worldwide Developer Conference. Their keynote speech that Tim Cook's going to give on Monday afternoon. That'll be at 1 o'clock our time, 10 a.m. there. Do you think Apple is going to use that Worldwide Developer keynote as a do-over to get the word out about where Apple TV Plus is at and when they're going to launch and how it'll be and the whole 10 yards of info?
Oh, yeah, when they did their, like, snooze up front, like their fake up front, the presentation where they didn't really have any content. Yes, I think Apple needs to use WWDC to actually show what we can expect, because we didn't really see anything. Yeah, they rolled out Hollywood Talent, but a lot of those shows were still in development, and they haven't even fully cast or shot anything. So, yeah, I kind of want to see what's more on this service. Look, Disney did their presentation during Investor Day, and I think blew everyone out of the water and then dropped their bomb that they're just going to be $7 a month. So Apple has a lot to live up to get those consumers. And again, Apple doesn't really – they have Oprah and they have a couple big-name stars, but they don't have those franchises that Disney has. They have like Sesame Workshop. They don't even have Sesame Street. They have Sesame Workshop. So they're already coming at a losing – they're coming in from a losing angle compared to Disney, which not only is investing – the same, if not more money than Apple in original content, they also have that library of content that's going in. So I think they really need to come forward during WWDC and show what else they can offer that's better than what's out there. But I just saw today that Apple hired a Disney Plus executive, Chiara Cipriani. She used to serve as the VP of Disney Plus International, and she ran a lot of their digital direct-to-consumer business, and she had roles in development and content distribution. I think it's a really interesting poach from Apple to bring her to their company, showing that they're starting to think, hey, we need some more media executives in this space to really make our offering sing.
Mm-hmm. And before I let you go, Michelle, my two cents in, I think Apple has to get its PR act together fast to talk about their shows, how Apple is going to roll out, the use of Apple Arcade also, and maybe packaging Apple TV Plus, Arcade, and Apple News Plus. I think it would be a marvelous smart TV set, smart device service But to do that, they have got to get out of that Cupertino bubble. Their PR people have got to get on the ball. I think we should do a press conference here in New York where you and I are there, that we ask questions. It's not just we listen, you talk, we just listen. But we ask what's going on here, and maybe we'll get some answers. I do think they've got some very interesting programming up their sleeve, but I agree with you. I think that they bombed out with that event in Cupertino because they didn't have sizzle reels. With some exception, the creators did not have anything to talk about. When one of the best things was Sarah Bareilles giving you the theme music for the show she's doing with J.J. Abrams. By the way, if that show goes on, I'd like to see that become an Emmy nominee for best theme show music, theme music. But they were really underprepared, and they just need to do a far better job than they've got now. So come on, Apple, come to New York, get the word out. We're waiting for you, Michelle.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure to have you on. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I also feel like, didn't you feel like they rushed out the announcement? I feel like they were just rushing to get out in front of the upfront. And they weren't really prepared.
Yeah.
That's just my
opinion.
Incidentally, I feel like they're rushing to make announcements.
Totally agree, and Michelle. And also, this is a lesson for everybody who is trying to get in. Disney Plus, Warner Media, you have to talk to the press. You have to talk to the public. You've got to find let people know what's going on. If you're going to have an investor day, do something, a press conference afterward, so that you know it's going to be. I do agree with Disney Plus. They're investing in the amount of work, but they should have done a press conference afterward where the press, wherever they were, in New York or L.A., should have been able to join and ask questions. If you want more of Michelle's wonderful reporting, here's where you go. Cheddar, the business news service we have on smart TV sets and smart devices across the country, also on cable, also on multicast channels around the country. For more details online, cheddar.com, CHEDDAR.com. Michelle, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Let's do this again soon. I hope you have a fantastic weekend.
Same to you. Thanks again for having me.
It's a pleasure. Enjoy. Take care.
Bye.
Michelle Castillo, senior reporter of Cheddar, joining us live from New York. That's going to do it for Normani Televised for today and for May. Thanks to all of our guests all month long. Thanks to all of you listening in. Don't forget, on Monday, Josh Evan, Rafa Dermkovich, host and executive producer of Fox's new live series, First Responders Live, from Dick Wolf's production company, coming next month on Fox. Host and executive producer, respectively. They're our lead guests. If you came in on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/teledog. Check out the podcast all weekend long on iTunes, Apple TV, and Spreaker's podcast app, and, of course, on the iHeartRadio podcast network. Love to hear from you. What do you think about the world of television, where it's at, where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UVCSimonTWBT. We always love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants on Studios of Block Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Block Talk Radio's production associate is Candace Williams. Eddie Toast, Block Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Soderberg, executive content producer. And the co-founders are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. The Bobby Televised was brought today by Audible.com, an Amazon company and proud development partner of the annual New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For three free audiobooks and a one-month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your May and a great start to June this weekend. And we'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Rock Talk Radio Spreaker and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're doing to wrap up the month and start the new one, please make it safe and make it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned. Bye, y'all.